Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is True Voice Media Conversations, episode 16, and I'm delighted because today I have Peter Shankman on the line with me. And Peter, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We haven't seen you since the Shankman Mastermind course that I got to attend. Thankfully, one of my partners got me that ticket, and I was really impressed by it. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sweet. So basically, the format of this podcast is it's very much the Mitch Joel Six Pixels of Separation. Ask smart people about things that they've done, and it's just kind of, you know, if you get stuck in an elevator with someone for, you know, 30 minutes, what would you ask them? So that's what this whole podcast is. So the first thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, I looked over all the stuff about you online. I mean, not just from what I've known about you, being in social since, you know, 2007 or so. But I'm looking over everything. I see this widespread amount of stuff that you do. And I've always thought of you as a PR person because that's how you were introduced to me as, but you're not just a PR person. How do you talk about yourself and what you do? And how do you message that so that people get the breadth of things without taking 45 minutes to list all of your accolades, accomplishments, and different things? How do you talk about yourself?
I get paid to think about things differently. I think it's the best way to possibly describe it. I tend to connect people who didn't know they needed to be connected so that they can do better work. I teach people new ways of thinking about things and new ways of generating revenue. I adopted social media very early, and then I sort of de-adopted it when, or unadopted it when the whole world started calling it, you know, the greatest thing ever. And that's when it's time to go. I believe that social is another aspect of marketing and advertising that has to fit into your quiver under the marketing quiver. It's just another arrow. And so I spend a lot of time teaching people how to better market themselves and their businesses by being better people and better companies with the end result of generating more revenue.
So, all right. So I love the way you just said that. And I struggle with talking about what we do because I framed our company as a social business agency, which I realize is just total jargon to most people. So I have to go out and talk about what that means. But I also realize that a lot of what I talk about with companies has nothing to do with social media. It's their website. It's their SEO. It's how they connect with other people. It's how they develop partnerships. It's how they collaborate internally. And so much of this stuff is not just social media. It's not just let's talk about Facebook and Twitter. So I've had a really hard time being able to communicate a lot of what you're saying because I think what I do is I come in with ideas and I help people figure things out and where to connect. So I mean, you have this very prolific presence online and a lot of people know who you are. So it kind of, you know, Peter Shankman comes before the what do you do a little bit. You kind of have the benefit of that. So I guess, do you find yourself ever struggling when somebody comes in and chats with you about having you come help them, a company, whatever, explaining to them what it is that you do and how you provide value in a way that they can tie back to how they see their businesses?
Well, you know, a lot of people look at me and they say, oh my God, you have thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of followers, hundreds of thousands of Facebook fans, and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people hit your blog every day. And my answer to that is that's just a number. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's not translating into something more than that, you know, what's the point? Likes, fans, followers, it's all bullshit.
Yep.
What can you do to translate that into sales, into growth, into revenue? And so a lot of what I do is teach companies better ways to interact with their customers. So, you know, while customer service, while marketing might be nice, while advertising, while social might be nice, at the end of the day, you know, if you had to put a gun to my head and say, label yourself, I teach better customer service. Mm-hmm. You know, we're moving towards, I mean, I believe that we're moving towards a world where the entire premise of what we do, how we do it, and who we do it with will not be determined by likes, fans, or followers. That's going to go away. It's going to be determined by who's in your network, who's been using you, who's been recommending you, who's been having a good experience with you. It's going to be coming back from people we trust. You know, I went on record and said that I believe that Yelp will be dead. And, you know, why the hell should I care about your review if I don't know you? But if I do know someone and they have a great experience, they're not even going to have to review it. I'll simply know that when I go into Google Maps and look for where to eat in Chicago.
So you had talked about this in the mastermind course, and I actually have this on my list of things I wanted to chat with you about, because you when you had said you believe Yelp will go away, I immediately was, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Yelp as a business side, but as a person, as a user of Yelp, I find it very helpful as a shortcut to find good places to eat and things like that. But I was definitely struck by your perspective on this, because it mirrors some of the things that Twitter has been talking about moving the scaffolding to the background, and then some of these other ideas that the sort of structure of these things will move to the background and it'll just be more about relationships and the people. Do you really see that happening? And also, is it a benefit to remove that sort of wisdom of the crowd that you get in the, you know, the 1,000 5-star reviews that are all anonymous people?
So I was in Atlanta last week, and I landed. And the second I landed, I turned on Facebook the second before I took off, and I saw updates from a few of my friends that I always see when I'm in New York. I landed in Atlanta, and all of a sudden I was seeing updates from people I haven't talked to in 6 months. These were people who live in Atlanta or in the area. You know, for me, that's more valuable. So when I'm walking down the street and I'm like, okay, Google, now find me a great place to eat. You know, tons of restaurants are going to come up, but what we're starting to see is the restaurants that come up first are the restaurants that people in my network have gone to and liked. You know, if someone goes, and here's why it gets interesting, because they don't have to leave a review. If they go to a restaurant and they have an amazing meal and they tweet a photo or they Instagram a picture and it's positive, it's like, oh my God, best clams ever. That sentiment is positive. And that's what's going to show up in my searches. So I don't need to go onto a separate item like Yelp, look for a restaurant, look for the kind of people, you know, hope that the reviews are positive, hope there's someone I trust. It's going to be given to me. And as we move more into that world where things are given to me, that's exciting. You know, I'd rather use Google Maps. I was using Foursquare primarily to check in to see who else in my network had been there. Using Google Maps, I see that now. So I have no need to use Foursquare anymore. The gamification of it doesn't really interest me. You know, I've been the mayor of the Newark Airport's United Lounge for months, and it doesn't really do much for me. I don't need that, you know, as a benefit. But when I go on to Google Maps and I look at something where I'm on Facebook and it recommends a restaurant that I'm really close to, and it says, hey, here are the 14 people you know who have had a good experience here, and they're all people I trust, you know, that's much more important to me. So that's where I think we're moving.
Well, let me push back on it, because of I think there's a complexity there that I'm curious about your perspective on. So the complexity is this that I've found, especially when I look at my different networks and the value of these different networks. So for instance, on Twitter, I'm much more connected with people that have similar professional interests as I do. But if I were to go to Facebook and ask the same kind of question I do on Twitter about something that's professionally relevant, something about social media, PR, search, technology, I'm not going to get the same level of responses than I would if I did it on Twitter or Google Plus or LinkedIn.
So, no, but you will. You will soon enough, because the concept of separate profiles and separate networks for different things is going away.
Do you think it's just going to be one network, or they're all going to integrate? What do you think is going to happen? How are we going to separate this personal professional sort of divide?
There is no personal professional anymore. There's you. There's the brand of you, you know, and I don't care what you do for a living. The brand of you has to trump everything else. If you love your job, you'll incorporate that into your brand. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't, you won't as much. But the brand of you is the one that's really going to kick out. The concept of multiple brands, multiple pages, personal, professional. Oh, well, I only show this people. Good luck managing that.
Yeah. So I agree with that. I think that, you know, trying to separate yourself as a brand is going to be difficult. I think where I'm a question I have is about when you're looking for certain types of information, certain venues or places are going to be more relevant to you. So for instance, if you know that you have certain friends that you trust regarding food, asking for recommendations and seeing them is one thing versus, you know, does anybody know of a good SEO firm? I put that on Facebook. I put that on Twitter. If you say someone regarding a technology for managing social profiles or whatever, that's going to carry a lot more weight. So I think that's what I'm getting at. It's not so much how do I manage my own brand or how do my clients manage their brand, but when seeking information, if this stuff moves to the background, how do we separate the sources that have credibility in one area or another?
We will know who those are. You know, I look at it like this. If I'm on Facebook and I post something, and if I post something on Twitter, I swear to God, that was like a bad version of Thriller.
Yeah. Oh, I have, door in my office just opened, so it's squeaky.
No, I was waiting for someone to come out with a hatchet.
God, no. Please, God.
I look at it along these lines. You know, are the networks going to merge? I don't know if they're going to merge, but I do know that I can update every single network with one click. And I think that over time, it's going to be easier to do that, and you're going to see benefit in doing that in some regard. Are there still separations right now? There are, but, you know, I don't know who's going to win. I don't know if it's going to be Facebook or Google that's going to win. It won't be Twitter. Mm-hmm. I hope it's a combination of Facebook and Google and they call it for Google. But I think that whoever does win, that will be the network and the sentiment will exist there. And that sentiment is what's going to matter the most. So when I ask a question, you know, I want to know about the best SEO. People that are going to see that question automatically are going to be people who have worked with the term of SEO before. I'll give an example. I'm an investor. I'm an early investor in a company called Simplist, Simpli.st. And what Simplist does is it lets you go through your networks and look at any term you want. So I can go through my network and say, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, find me anyone who's talked about Ironman triathlons. And it will pull together a list that I can pull into Excel or I can pull into a Gmail list or whatever the case may be, all of which is right there. And the beauty of that is it allows me to use my network the way it should be used. Fast forward that to 5 years from now, when I go into my network and go, okay, just signed up, or I didn't have to do it. I sign up for an Ironman. It's automatically, my feed knows that. And then all of a sudden, I'm just going to start seeing more updates from people who also are involved in Ironman, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or whatever. That's where the benefit comes. So you're not going to have to ask half the questions we ask right now. They're going to be automatically answered. That's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. How far off do you think we are from all of this stuff happening? I find it exciting, too. At the same time, I also fear the singularity in our robot overlords. But at the same time, I do think it's exciting to have smarter technology that gives us what we need, but in a way that we still maintain a level of control. You know, I have an issue with the Facebook news feed. How far off are we?
It's also going to be easier as hell than ever. It's going to be easier than ever before to get off the grid. All we have to do is shut off one device. You know, I think that I say 24 to 36 months. I mean, I predicted 2 years ago, a year ago, I said Yelp will be gone in 3 years. We're a year in. And they just announced their quarterly earnings 2 weeks ago. Their stock plummeted like a stone, and they announced hundreds of thousands of FTC violations. Not FTC,
FCC?
One of the violations from the Better Business Bureau, things like complaints.
Yeah.
You know, that was nice to see come true. geographically, Facebook was going to start embracing geography. Now whenever I sign on and I see people in different cities that I'm in, you know, that's starting to come true. So it's nice when you're right. I've been wrong about other things. But, it's, you know, there was a song back in 1999 by a girl that was called I Am Me, and I thought it was going to be number one hit, never really made it. But, you know, I think we're about 24 to 36 months out from this stuff happening. And it's not – every time there's been a pushback on Facebook or, you know, oh, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that, you know, Facebook's just gone ahead and done it. And if the world likes it, it stays there. If the world doesn't like it, it goes away. You know, remember Google Wave? That failed miserably, so they rolled it back. You know, the reason I respect Google as much as I do is that they don't sit there with focus groups that much. They just do it. They just post. They go, you know, here it is. It's live. You guys like it? Great. We'll improve it. You guys hate it? Okay, we'll get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're willing to take that risk. I wish more companies were willing to do that.
Do you you've probably heard recently about Google Plus and how Vic stepped down and
yep.
They've kind of shifted resources. Is that something that you see as writing on the wall that they're thinking this isn't working, or that they're just maybe shifting their strategy and there's a lot of conjecture around it that may be unwarranted?
When you have a company with that much money, it's really hard to say what they're going to do.
Yep.
Everyone's like, oh, that means Google Plus is dead. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Trust me. You know, if they're making all the comments on YouTube, Google Plus based, they're not throwing that away anytime soon. So, you know, you might see changes. No doubt you'll see changes, but it's not going away.
All right, good. I was feeling the same way. I actually said about 2 years ago, maybe like a year and a half ago, I said something along the lines of, I think Google Plus will be the most important network in the next 5 years. And I believe that just because we are so deeply embedded as a culture in Google with how we search for things, Gmail, Google Calendar, things like that. It's such a part of our life. Android, Google Now. So I just see it as being a really smart play to integrate social data in the next layer and level of Google.
Well, that's how I would phrase it differently. I'd say Google is going to be the most important network in our lives. I don't know. So will it be Plus? Will it be something else? Who the hell knows? You know, right now I open my computer. I can send an email, a text from my phone, everything I do right from my computer. As all this stuff gets integrated and Google just keeps buying up all the software that's doing it, it will become the one platform. You know, I go into another city or another country. I go into another country. I install a new SIM card on my phone. I turn the phone on. I enter the info. It repopulates. So, you know, how do you can't argue that. It's there.
It's pretty rad. Well, let me ask you this. Let's pivot real quick. I want to talk to you about, you know, you've had these insights, you've had these ideas, you've been right on some, you've been wrong on some, but let's roll back the tape all the way. So you were at AOL at one point and you were really helping them kind of pioneer their news and editorial content and everything to kind of make the AOL newsroom something that people embraced. One, if you could give me just a real quick, what was the lead up to that? What was the pre-AOL days? How did you get to this point where you were able to do that? And then moving past the AOL days, what would you say was the tipping point for you professionally where you were able to have this freedom in your career to kind of take on all these different things and think and get paid to think and be who you are today?
Well, AOL, I had two different questions. AOL was, I based America. I was hanging out in something called the Melrose Place TV Gossip Chat Room, which was exactly what it sounds like. It was a chat room in America Online talking about the TV show Melrose Place. Someone in that chat room said, my company's trying to build a newsroom. Why don't you submit your resume? 2 weeks later, I was an editor at AOL, one of the founding editors. It was an amazing experience. I had a great time. When I left AOL, I came back to New York and I had all this knowledge of the internet. Everyone thought at that point AOL was the internet. You know, the web was just starting. And so I was able to sort of parlay that into consulting and talking to people about what I was doing and things like that. And it was exciting. It was brand new. And my whole goal was always to get out in front of it. I mean, as I've been sitting here with you, I just got an email from my friend Janelle, who's a producer over at CNN. Hey, can you come on at 3 p.m. and talk about Donald Sterling's image? I'm like, sure, let's do it. You know, to move that to the next level, I have two basic premises of how I go through life. The first one is that I never turn down an opportunity unless there's really no value in it. And you can always find value in something. And the second thing is something I've had since I went on my own for the first time in 98, which is very simply, if it fails, I'll get a job. You know, I've always believed that if it doesn't work and I wake up tomorrow and I have nothing, I'll go get a job. I'm employable. You know, shit, I'll flip burgers, man. I don't care. I'll do whatever it takes. Look, I grew up in New York City. I was a public school kid. My parents didn't have a lot. You know, I wasn't rich or privileged or anything like that. I learned to take the subway when I was 7 years old by myself, you know, and I'm a hustler. And that's when you're a fat Jewish kid from New York City and you don't have a lot of money, you either learn to hustle really quick or you learn to stay in the shadows. And I just never liked the shadows. So I learned to be a hustler. And for me, the dawn of a new day is the excitement of the promise of what it holds. And the dawn of the evening is the same because that means there's tons of shit going on in Asia. You know, where can you reach out and get that? So for me, the promise of what's out there is the most exciting part of my life. And achieving some of that, you know, look, I don't expect to win it all. I don't expect to be a triple billionaire. I mean, Dr. Dre is about to be a billionaire with the sale of Beats to Apple. Good for him, man. He worked his ass off. He deserves that. You know, I have about 7 or 8 investments, angel investments that, you know, I just want one to pay off. Let one pay off. I'll pay off my mortgage and I'll buy another place. And, you know, I don't need a lot, but at the end of the day, I'm having a field day. I'm having a lot of fun. I have a great wife. I have a great 1-year-old daughter. I'm actually doing this interview from her room because she's taken over the living room. And so as long as I can keep having a good time and I wake up every morning and I smile, I don't need much more than that, you know? And so I think that's why I say at the end of the day, my mantra of how I went from starting out at AOL to this has just always been, I'll try it. And if it doesn't work, I'll do something else. You know, I think a lot of people hamstring themselves by looking at all the negatives and saying, well, I don't want to do this because, you know, wow, what if it doesn't work? If it doesn't work, get a fucking job. Do something else. This isn't rocket science here. No one's saying if you do this, you're going to get, and it doesn't work, you're going to get shot in the head. Just go do it. If it doesn't work, do something else.
That's fascinating. I have a very similar perspective, except, you know, when I think of the, if it doesn't work, I'll go get a job. That to me is one of the most terrifying concepts in the world, which is what actually motivates me to keep trying and working harder and putting in extra hours and doing what I do, because the concept of going and working for somebody else is, quite frankly, it's one of the most terrifying things I can think of. Maybe that and like rattlesnakes, sharks, you know, that those are pretty much up there in Jeff's fears.
I agree with you that it is, but on the flip side, there's nothing wrong with taking a job. You know, if you're taking a job, do the best at it, do the best you can at it, and plot your future. You know, plot what you want to do next. I remember sitting in a job that I hated for about 6 months before I went out on my own after AOL, and it was the last job I ever had. And I just felt like all the time I wasn't working for them, I was just plotting what I wanted to do next, and there's nothing wrong with that. Go after what you love and work really, really, really hard at it to be the best you can be at it. There's no shame in that, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I so dig that perspective, man. Like 110%, it resonates with me, and I hope anybody listening to this, you know, I have some friends that have thought about the idea of doing something entrepreneurial, starting their own thing, doing a side business, whatever. And I always encourage them because I hold that very same perspective that I think you just got to take that risk. You got to go after what it is that you love in life and wake up smiling. So I dig it, man. So, you know, regarding, you know, kind of your tipping point and, you know, I get the process, the mindset that you're in there. How much did Harrow play a point or play a part in getting you from one level to the next? Did you see that as sort of an accelerator in your career, or is that something that was just part and parcel of the Peter Shankman story, or was it really kind of a tipping point?
Yeah, Harrow was definitely a growth mode for me. You know, when I built Harrow, by the height of it, I had 250,000 people who three times a day were getting email from me, you know, and that really helped grow my brand. It helped grow my name. And also it taught me a ton about people and a ton about how audiences work, you know. I would look at the numbers religiously every day. How many people are opening this? How can I make it better? I was getting a 79% open rate on three emails a day, which is just obscene.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a very basic premise. Give the audience what they want, when they want it, how they want it. And so for me, I learned so much about that. So that by the time I sold Harrow, I had sort of started out with a brand and I was able to keep building that, which was me, the brand of Peter Shankman. So I still build that to this day. And everything I do is designed everything I post, everything I share is designed to make, to give value and benefit to the people who are nice enough to follow me. You know, having an audience, I say this all the time, having an audience is a privilege. It's not a right. You know, it's exactly like wearing spandex. There are very few people in this world who have the right to wear spandex. For most of us, it's a privilege during a race. So, you know, it's the same thing with an audience. I have an audience that, and I'm humbled that they're here. I don't have the right to an audience. I have the privilege of working hard every day to try and keep my audience and grow my audience. But that's really all any of us have.
How did the idea of Harrow hit you? Was it one of those, you know, Newton apples falling from the tree sort of things? Or was it, you know, a conversation that you had, something that developed over time, or did it just hit you and you built it?
I was helping journalists. I'm a nice guy who knows a lot of people, and journalists would always say to me, hey, we're doing a story on XYZ. You know a lot of people. Do you know anyone who could fit in this? You know, and over time, I said, there's got to be a better way to do this. So I started a Facebook group. We outgrew the Facebook group in 15 minutes, and I moved over to the web. Harrow was born.
That's fantastic, man. That's fantastic.
It's nothing, you know, it wasn't rocket science. I didn't have a lot of programming. It was incredibly basic, but very helpful.
Excellent. So focusing on value and helping that audience that you feel privileged to have, which leads me to something else I wanted to talk to you about, which was, I don't know how long you've been doing this, but, you know, you and I have been loosely connected a lot online for like 5 or 6 years or something like that. And I had the privilege to meet you at the Mastermind course, which I also want to talk a little bit about. But one of the things that recently brought you back into focus for me was this post that you did where you were helping people get flights home for the holiday. And I was so struck by that because for me, part of what I do in my business and what's so important to me is that if I achieve any measure of influence, I want to be able to use that influence for some positive gain, not for myself, but for others to improve the world. I actually look at the purpose of my company to improve the world through installing social businesses. So this flights for the holiday thing, can you talk a little bit about what that was, how it's worked out, how long you've been doing it, and if you have any plans to expand outside of the flights for the holiday into other similar sort of initiatives.
I travel about 300,000 miles a year for work. When you reach a certain level of travel, you get miles basically just for breathing. And I had a ton of them. And so a couple of years ago, I said, hey, you know what? I'd love to give some friends some miles home for the holidays. People I don't know, let me see who I can help out. People who might need, you know, who aren't as fortunate as me. And I think I gave away 8 trips 2 years ago. And last year I posted again and a whole bunch of people said, I want to join. I want to donate. I want to help. And I think we gave away like 28 flights home. JetBlue donated 10. I mean, it was amazing. And it was this incredible experience to meet all these people who had never, you know, army people who had no thought of ever being able to get home. All of a sudden we're going home and meeting there, seeing their family, seeing their grandkid for the first time, whatever it was, seeing their daughter. And it was just this great feeling. And, you know, at the end of the day, I know it's going to sound trite, but we're all on this planet together. And that's pretty much all we have. You know, no one's going to say, screw you, I'm going to another planet. So here's what we got, right? Why not do what you can to help people? It makes you feel really good. There's a benefit in it. I mean, people knew me from it. You reconnected with me. I mean, and it sort of fits in with this book, my last book, Nice Companies Finish First, which is basically that companies that are nice, that actually want to be nice and genuinely nice, actually generate a lot more revenue than companies that are sort of douchebags. So why not be a good person, you know, and help people? I mean, the letters I got back from people who flew home, unbelievable. The amount of emails and phone calls and pictures and it was awesome, man. I mean, you know, so I want to do it again this year. I'm going to work with Randy Peterson over at Flyer Talk. We're going to create a donation page and really get a bunch of people in it. So it's going to be good stuff.
That's really awesome. So on the same idea of this nice companies finish first, when you look out at the business environment and how it's changing as a result of, you know, the changes in technology, changes in consumer behavior, you know, opening up everybody to have their own voice, all of these shifts that have happened over the last, you know, 7 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. Do you, from your perspective, I mean, you've worked with some very large brands. You know, we work with small and medium-sized businesses, primarily locally, but you're getting some peeks into really big brands. You've had the opportunity to work with just mega brands. Do you see from your perspective that there's a shift on the corporate side, on the business side, towards doing this? And do you think that they're doing it for the right reasons or because they think, you know, this is self-serving?
I think there is a middle ground. If you're helping people out, you're actually doing good things and you're making the universe a better place, who gives a shit if it's self-serving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone asked me if I wanted to start a nonprofit, I said, no, I'd rather focus on a company that makes money and then be able to give back that money to help, because you know, Gordon Gekko once said, anything worth doing is worth doing for money, right? If I can do something and generate revenue from it and take that revenue and help a lot more people without doing it in the first place in such a way that I'm a douche, why not? You know, so I think that companies are realizing, hey, people want to see nice companies. They want to see companies that are decent, that help people. And then they see the value in it. Holy shit, we're getting more clients. We're getting more customers. We're making more money. Okay, cool. Let's keep doing this. It's a win-win-win. There's no downside. The only downside is when you do it and you don't mean it, people will see through that.
Yeah.
So it has to be real. It has to be real.
So on the flip side of it, do you see that there's and you know, how long do you give the companies that are out there that aren't doing this, that aren't thinking like this, that aren't looking to improve the world in some way or help their customers or focus on their best customers or any of that? How long do you give companies like that? Do you think that we're in a phase where this rapid change of technology and, you know, the ability for people to kind of pivot on a dime and take on a new vendor or whatever, do you see that the time is running out for those selfish kind of corporations?
Yeah, I mean, there'll always be a place for them just because, you know, people are hard to change. But over time, that will go away. That's not going to be forever. You know, you're going to see more and more. Target, if you run any sort of arts company right now, Target will just throw money at you. They want to be involved. They want to help make the world a better place. There's a lot of good that can be done out there, and companies are starting to see it. There's a lot of money to be made when you do good, which to me is the best of both worlds.
Cool. So tell me a little bit about, you know, I have to admit, we just moved into new offices and we've been kind of swamped with a couple projects lately. So I have not been checking in on the mastermind group emails. But I got an email this morning, strangely enough, right before our podcast, from someone who was in our mastermind that was like, yo, you need to be more active because it's about time somebody helped you for a change. So apparently they're really landing. You know, I know you've been on this kind of cross-country tour doing these mastermind groups. Give me an update on how it's been going and, you know, some of the things that you're seeing or learning from it as, you know, other people out there maybe thinking about starting masterminds or thinking about checking in and figuring out a way to get it to be a part of yours. You know, kind of give me the update. Where's it been going? How's it been going?
We're getting some really good stuff. I mean, the beauty of the masterminds is that, you know, we have this back-end network for all the alumni all over the country, all over the world. So, you know, every morning, every Friday morning, we have accountability calls where you could sign on and actually get on a phone call and people will, you know, hey, here's what I wanted to work on last week. Here's what I've done. Here's how much I've done. Here's what I want to do for next week. And for the solo entrepreneur or the entrepreneur who works by themselves, it's a great way to keep accountable. So we have those. The masterminds themselves, we're getting about anywhere from 30 to 50 people per mastermind. It's growing rapidly. We're selling out. We have Toronto next week. That's almost sold out. Miami, Jacksonville, Houston are all coming up. It's really good stuff. And we're getting tremendous success from people who are saying yes, gave me a whole new way to think, a whole new way to learn. We put people at tables with people similar to them, different industries, and just let them talk. I give a little bit of a keynote. Everyone comes away from the day really, really learning, and it's just a phenomenal way to learn. And I'm keeping the price deliberately low because I think that, you know, you shouldn't have to pay a fortune to get really great knowledge.
That's a really great perspective. So, Peter, before I let you go, want to just quickly ask you, you know, as we're moving through the rest of this year, what are some ways that people can connect with you or get involved with some of the things that you're trying to do, either from a social good standpoint or just in ways that they can educate themselves and make themselves better, better equipped to make their businesses run more effectively or get more customers or provide better customer service? What are some ways that people can follow up with you and see and check in on what you're doing?
Well, I write a blog post almost every day at Shankman.com. My whole life is at Shankman.com. That's easy. The mastermind series is at Shankminds.com. My email, my personal email that I answer myself is peter@shankman.com, and I always answer that. If I'm ever in your city, you can check out my calendar on my site. If I'm ever in your city, I'll buy the first cup of coffee. Meetme.so/Peter Shankman. You can schedule a meeting with me. I'll always take it. Yeah, for me, it's really just about connecting in whatever way works best for people and you know, doing a little bit to help make the world a better place. I think that, you know, we sort of owe that to people who were, as my daughter attempts to get into the office. But as, you know, we owe that to people to sort of leave the world a little bit better than we found it. And if we can do that and make money at the same time, it's a great way.
All right, final point, ADD to ADD. How do you keep up with all of these appointments and things and still able to keep yourself on track with all of the initiatives you have, the writing, the this, that, like, do you sleep? So that's one. And then two, you know, you'd mentioned the accountability calls. Do you have for yourself any sort of a structure that you use to keep yourself on track?
Actually, I totally wasn't listening. I was looking at a squirrel. No, for me, it's very much about, I try to get 8 hours of sleep a night. I don't really go out much anymore, and I don't think you need to. For me, it's, you know, having 8 hours of sleep a night really helps. In a great bed, I have a Sleep Number X12 bed that responds to my voice. It is the greatest bed in the history of ever. My God, I love that bed. To be able to get a good night's sleep, wake up refreshed. I wake up super early. I'm usually up around 4:30 in the morning, and that's awesome because you get to really get a jump on the day before anyone else wakes up. I do things that keep me moving, skydiving, running, training, things that keep my my adrenaline running and my serotonin up, my dopamine, all those things you need to help you focus. And so for me, that's how I do it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Peter, tell people where they can go to be social with you. I mean, we've got Shankman.com, but, you know, where can people connect with you otherwise?
Everything in the world is pretty much at Peter Shankman.
Awesome. Awesome. Peter, thank you so much for being on the show. You were one kick-ass dude, and I'm so glad that we got the chance to do this.
Pleasure was mine, Jeff. We'll do it again sometime soon.
Cool. Take care, man. Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show, and we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.